Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I'm Barry McCracken. I'm here on behalf of Anthony Lamont Purvis from the Norfolk Public Defender's Office. This matter is coming on appeal out of the Norfolk Circuit Court.
You care to reserve any time for rebuttal for whatever good it might do you?
Judge, what I might ask is just to try something a little different. Could I go along and get to a point where I think maybe nobody's throwing anything at me and choose to try to say whatever's left at that point?
Yes,
rather
sir.
Than,
yes,
you know,
sir.
When I tell you 5 minutes up front, it never works out.
Yeah, it does never work when I've seen it. Yes.
No, sir. It's not in my either current or distant memory. Mr. Purvis was convicted of possession of potentially cocaine, received a lengthy sentence. It was on a conditional guilty plea. Earlier in the proceeding, he first made a motion to suppress the evidence. The basis of the suppression motion and the assignment of error here is it is the defense contention that the search, the stop of the defendant on the highway went from a legal stop to an illegal detention, and everything thereafter, the search of the defendant's person, and it happened actually twice on the roadside, and search of his vehicle, and the subsequent search warrant that resulted in items being recovered from his residence, all of that's proved void and true. Now, we all know what the standards are, and I'm not going to jump in and go through all the, you know, we know this is the tally of the circumstances, and we know he gets the benefit of every reasonable inference we can get from the officer's testimony. And really, the cutting edge here is this is a somewhat unusual circumstance. There's no dispute, looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, that the stop was preceded, the officer observed what he perceived to be an illegal right-hand turn from the middle lane. He activated his lights, pulled the defendant over. The defendant, upon being initially questioned by the officer, acknowledged that his license was suspended, and the officer verified that. So at that point in time, there's no question the officer could have removed him from the vehicle, put him in handcuffs, and taken him straight away to jail. He elected not to do that. And the reason he elected not to do that, he wasn't about traffic stops. This thing started out because he was following Mr. Purvis pursuant to a drug investigation. And how much information they had about the drug investigation at that point is unknown. So basically, as I noted in my brief, for purposes of our analysis, he had a hunch that he was involved in drugs at that point in time. He clearly had evidence of an illegal traffic turn, and basically once he talked to my client and ran him through the radio net, that he was driving on suspended operator's license. The officer, however, in his own words, said, "I elected to forego pursuit of the investigation under my discretion to do so, and elected to pursue the drug investigation." And he did so by telling the defendant, "I'm not overly concerned about those traffic offenses. How about I search your car?" And that's essentially a paraphrase of the officer's words. Now, I acknowledge in the brief, and I want to make clear, because we're dancing along a fairly fine edge here. The point in time when the officer acknowledged that he basically ceased the traffic investigation was right when he, because this all happened within a space of seconds, or at least probably no more than 30 seconds, "I'm not overly concerned about the traffic offenses, but how about you let me search you in your car?" When he said, "I'm not overly concerned," that was basically his, and he acknowledged at that point in time he was no longer investigating suspended operator's license, illegal right turns. He was looking for evidence of drugs. He was on an independent investigation. This is not a detour. The Ellis case, I cited that in my brief. This is not the officer taking a detour during what was an orderly process of a traffic violation. He abandoned that. He really had no interest in it in the first place.
This is after he'd already checked the ID.
He'd already checked the ID, and by his testimony, I mean, it's the officer saying this. We're not asking you to infer anything. It's what the officer said he did. I had discretion. I elected to forego any further traffic investigation. I stopped it right at that point.
So did I understand correctly in your brief that you conceded that the traffic stop had ended at that point?
It had ended at that point. Now, the problem is the only thing he said and where we can pick a point and say that's when it ended was the words, "I'm not overly concerned with traffic violation." Now, that's informing the defendant, but it's a very ingenious way of doing so, because he didn't tell him he was letting him go. He didn't say you're free to leave, and he didn't tell him he wasn't going to write him a ticket. You know, what all he informed him essentially was, I'm not overly concerned about that. I'd really like to pat you down and get in the car and see what you got in there. Now, that is not Ellis. This is purely Harris. And, you know, and God bless the Virginia Supreme Court, because this is right on point with Harris. We can argue all the things that have happened, in later cases. We can talk about whether or not, you know, they were discussing the Mets game, how the World Series came out. This was not a consensual encounter. And Harris tells us that. And the case I didn't cite, but cited in Harris, and it's a little earlier case, but it stands for the same proposition, is Rettinger. That's it. It's Rettinger v. Commonwealth at 260 VA 232. Unlike normal in my brief, I didn't cite you every authority I could have pointed at, because Harris seems to control this. But we do this by totality of circumstances, and I understand that we pick and choose things that are similar and dissimilar, and we all say this is an analogy, that's an analogy. The striking similarities to this in both Rettinger and Harris are that the officers in those cases, and Harris specifically, had elected to forego a clear traffic violation. There was no question that he had committed, he had a safety violation, but he also was driving without a license. Not a suspended license like this case, but he was driving without a license, which is a misdemeanor. And, you know, it's a non-jailable misdemeanor. I think it called it, in those days, there had been a fine if I recall correctly. But be that as it may, it was a clear traffic violation, and the officer elected to forego that investigation and pursue. And Harris, I think, was a trooper, not an officer, but basically elected to pursue a drug investigation. Can I search your car? And the blue light's still flashing, and he's still wearing that uniform. But by the way, this is a uniformed officer in an unmarked car. Now, you look through Harris and try to see where Harris is different than Purvis, and there's one officer, not two. In Harris, there were two. In Rettinger, there were two. But that's just a fortuitous circumstance. There's one officer conducting this investigation. He's no less intimidating. He is displaying a firearm, unless he's unlike any other Norfolk police officer in full uniform going about his duty. He's got a blue light flashing, and he has very succinctly abandoned an investigation of what he observed, what he had probable cause of, and launched into a drug investigation, which he had no more than a hunch at this point in time. And he did it in a fashion that the client didn't know he was free to leave or not. And that's the issue here. I mean, we can slice and dice and go back and forth, but Harris is a very short case, and Rettinger is a very short case, and they're both very similar circumstances. And the reason they're very short, because the principles are very straightforward. We don't have to go dancing around and talk about, well, is this just a normal citizen encounter? This is an extenuation of the stop. The stop he had every right to do. I had not suggested the police officer was acting illegally and turning on the light, approaching the car. And he had, apparently within Virginia jurisprudence and his police procedures, the right to forego an investigation of traffic offenses, including a suspended operator's license. And he did that. But he did it in a way the defendant's not on any, no one being told, I'm not overly concerned about that. How about you let me search the car? It's going to feel that they can put it in gear and roll on out of there.
So when did the stop conclude?
It concluded when the officer, he made up his mind that he was going to pursue his drug investigation and told the defendant, I'm not overly concerned about your traffic violations. Let me search the car. That's when, it concluded right at that point. But at that point in time, when the illegal action takes place, it doesn't have to occur over a 10-minute period. Once he made the decision to toss the proper traffic investigation and pursue the drug investigation, he moved into an area where the defendant was not free to leave and for which he had no reasonable basis to make the request. And the defendant's answer, go ahead, is just like in Harris. And it came just like it did in Harris, because the police was exercising an illegal restraint on his freedom at that time. Now,
so humor me.
I'm trying to.
A second. Well, I didn't ask the question yet.
I know, but I always try to humor you, Judge.
Okay.
You know that.
Well, humor me. Let's go through the elements in your case that suggest that it was not voluntary. The facts.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Basically, we've got a blue light, we got a man with a uniform who's made a legitimate stop. He tells him that he's not concerned with the traffic violation. But that doesn't tell him he's not going to write him a ticket. It's just like in Harris. You know, he didn't tell him he was free to leave. And I agree that, as Commonwealth has pointed out, that's not a litmus test. And look, even in the reason I cited to you, Rettinger to you, because in Rettinger, they told him he was free to leave. But the Supreme Court said, look, just because you told him that, what you did next and what you said next made it very clear to a person of reasonable understanding that he wasn't really free just to drive on off. And that's, again, here, he didn't tell him he was free to leave. He also didn't tell him he was, like the officer and the trooper in Harris, he didn't tell him he wasn't going to write him a ticket. He just said he wasn't overly concerned about it.
And I don't mean to interrupt your answering Judge Decker's question, and maybe it ties into that, but what effect does the concession that the traffic stop had in fact ended have on this? How is it not then consensual? Because it's been conceded the traffic stop.
Well, I mean, the whole point is would someone of ordinary understanding feel he was free to ignore the officer and go about his business? And clearly, had he not clearly told him he was going, and that's what happened in Harris. The officer didn't tell him he wasn't going to write the ticket. He just went about an independent investigation.
The defendant was seized without.
He was seized. The point is that, you know, once he determined not to pursue the traffic violation, any further contact with the defendant was an extension of the seizure, because nothing happened to break the chains. The blue light's still going. He's still standing there with a gun. He has not told the defendant he's been released. He has not told him he's not going to pursue the traffic offenses. Clearly, I mean, he did tell him, I'm not concerned about it. But I mean, that's, if you look at it, and this kind of comes up in the Commonwealth's idea that there was no illegal conduct. This is a very ingenious thing. Basically, by saying I'm not overly concerned, he made up his own mind. He really didn't care about traffic offenses. He wanted to get my client's pants, and he wanted to get his car. And he gave him some information, but he didn't give him enough. He didn't give him enough to say, look, we can talk about the Mets game, we can talk about the World Series, or you can let him search your car.
But there's no magical language that the officer needs to use when they're asking for consent to search.
I think the key thing here you have to understand is you have to break apart the two things. One is you can ask for consent to search, and even if you're being detained, you can ask for consent to search if it's clearly a voluntary act. But the whole problem, and this is the problem, this is the reason you can't get this out of Rettinger and Harris, is because the defendant was never in a position where he could perceive, where anyone would have reasonably perceived that he was in a purely voluntary discussion with the officer. And it takes less, if you've got a lawful seizure, if what you're trying to do, and that's what Harris and Rettinger really stand for, neither of those cases was the individual originally unlawfully detained. It was the extension, and that's all we're talking about, is the extension of the detention when the legal purpose for his detention had ceased. In this case, it ceased because the officer voluntarily, on his own discretion, elected to terminate the traffic investigation. Once that happened, it was no longer a consensual encounter, and all those factors that would tell somebody on the side of the road that they were free to go about their business and were voluntarily electing to talk to the officer further, none of those factors were there. There was no context of voluntariness at the point in time the defendant said, you can search me, you can search the car. Let me try to save that minute and 40. I'm sure he's got something to say that I want to come back.
Yes, sir. All right. Mr. Whitman.
Good morning, Judge Huff, and may it please the court. Stephen Whitmer on behalf of the Commonwealth this morning, this afternoon. The concession that the traffic stop ended is not the only concession that appears in this case. The defense states on brief, McMullen determined to abandon pursuit of the traffic offenses and so informed the defendant. That seems to be a concession that the defendant was adequately informed that there was not going to be pursuit of those offenses.
Is that concession supported by the record?
Your Honor, it is supported by the record, unless if the defendant wants to dispute the clarity of the statement, perhaps,
Well, wasn't the statement from the officer, I'm not concerned about the traffic?
That is the statement from the officer, and we would argue that was sufficient under the circumstances.
Even though it fell short of saying, you're free to go.
Even though it fell short of saying, you're free to go, and in fact, while you know, the statement, you're free to go, is sufficient in almost every case. The courts have never adopted a rule that requires that of an officer.
Mr. Whitmer, what difference does it make with the qualifier in there, I'm not overly concerned? I mean, overly is a significant addition to that statement. There's a big difference between I'm not overly concerned with and I'm not concerned with.
I think the significance of the word overly is to some degree subjectively dependent upon the intention of the speaker and the perception of the hearer.
And how are we to know that the intention of the speaker on this isn't that, well, I'm concerned about it, I'm just not overly concerned about it, because that's the least of your worries in this situation.
Under the circumstances, I think that is an inference too far, because there's nothing to support that sort of analysis of the words, that this is the least of your problems. Particularly since at that point there had been no search, there had been no discovery of any contraband, and there really hadn't been a substantial investigation of any sort related to narcotics. Now, the other part of this is that this is not a Terry stop. This is actually a stop based upon probable cause. The officer has substantial latitude. If in fact Mr. Purvis was not free to go, then this was the continuation of a stop based upon probable cause, not a Terry stop. And during a stop based upon probable cause, the officer had the authority to make a custodial arrest of the defendant, to search him incident to that arrest, to take him into custody. Had the constitutional authority, as distinguished from what he statutorily would have been authorized to do for a misdemeanor offense, because under 1976, the presumption usually is that an officer will issue a summons for a misdemeanor offense.
Let me further complicate this. The officer didn't say you're free to go. He said, I'm not overly concerned about this. We all know that under the Fourth Amendment, the officer's subjective intent is irrelevant. The question is communication and what was communicated to the defendant, which is why officers are told when you end your stop, tell them you're ending your stop. In this case, he said, I'm not overly concerned. How is that not his subjective intention or belief as opposed to something that would end the stop?
I think that really is, to the extent that this, you know, if this were merely a Terry stop, I think that would be the beginning and end of the case, would be this court would have to determine whether the officer's remarks were sufficient to place the defendant on notice.
And of course the defendant concedes a stop, but we have to make our own legal determination.
I think that's that. Where this would place the court, if this were merely a Terry stop and not a stop based upon probable cause.
Tell us a little bit about why Harris doesn't apply.
In the first instance, I think it would be the position of the Commonwealth that Harris is wrongly decided in some ways, but we are not asking this court to overrule it, because this court can't.
I was going to say good luck with that.
Really, the proposition that the mere presence of a police officer, his activation of safety equipment to make the scene safe and so on, is itself intimidating, is a dubious proposition at best, and it's been the Commonwealth's position that is the case. However, it is controlling on this court. The officer was not displaying a firearm. As long as that firearm remains in the officer's holster, that's merely part of the officer's uniform.
But he was wearing a uniform.
He certainly was wearing a uniform.
Blue lights blaring.
And there were blue lights. On the other hand, it's not possible for an officer to effectuate a safe traffic stop
without
blue lights.
Right.
Until all of the parties are ready to leave the scene, it probably isn't safe to turn those lights off. So Harris, once again, I think you know, it brings us back to the question of whether the officer's words were sufficient to place the defendant on notice that the traffic violations were off the table. That's really the decision that this court has to make. I don't think there's anything truly novel here.
Is your position that because the officer had probable cause to write a summons for the traffic infraction, that if we conclude that the stop had not been ended at the point in time that the officer made those comments, that he would have a basis to conduct the search without the consent based on probable cause?
It's my position that indeed yes, and that the Constitution would have permitted an arrest and a search incident to arrest. So for those reasons, we would ask the court to affirm. We have to answer any questions the court may have.
Very good. We thank you, Mr. Whitman. Mr. McCracken, your remaining seconds.
Basically, I'm glad to say that I agree with a lot of what he said, because I think that's exactly what this comes down to. Harris is the governing authority, but so is Redinger. And remember, Redinger, they told him he could leave, and that wasn't enough. And there really wasn't anything more in Redinger than there was here. But this really is Harris. And I'll admit, when I read my brief, I was a little appalled the reason I said he was informed, it's necessary, that's necessary to pick the point when the investigation of the traffic offenses had ceased. But it's clearly easy. He did so, as I noted in my argument, he did so in a very ingenious manner. It did not clearly inform him. He was, it's not like he told him he was free to leave, but he also didn't tell him the traffic offense. He told him it was, but he told him in a fashion such that a reasonable person wouldn't understand that this wasn't still part of the traffic stop.
Well, what do you think about the Commonwealth's point that probable cause remained?
There was probable cause in Harris. He told him, I don't have my driver's license on me. There's no pay. That's not a Terry position.
Was that argued, though?
I have no way of knowing. I know it's the facts in the case because they cited, the Supreme Court specifically cited, the whole reason they said that the traffic offense was over was he told him he didn't have a license. And he admitted that his right or left headlight wasn't working out. So both of the offenses for which to stop, it wasn't just a Terry stop, it was a valid traffic stop. He had PC, Harris had, the trooper in Harris had as much PC as the officer here did. It just was for a misdemeanor, it was just for a non-jailable misdemeanor, but that doesn't change the analysis. I mean, the officer could write summons for this offense just like he could have for the offenses in Harris. So that hadn't changed. So there is no real distinction. And basically, the wording the officer chose to use basically indicated that he was not pursuing the traffic offenses for purposes of this court's determination of when that ended, but it didn't put a person of reasonable intelligence on fair notice that we're now in move from a stop, traffic stop, to a consensual encounter where I'm free to say, no, I don't want you to search my person. And by the way, this idea that if you assume that the PC allowed the officer to continue, this was a probable cause, he could have taken him out of the car and arrested him, but he couldn't search the car, which is where a lot of the dope got recovered. So there was a search of the car involved here, too. And that's probably the reason why he wasn't overly concerned about the traffic offenses, because basically this is not a rookie cop, although he sounded like it in some of the things he said. He basically, by getting consent to search, got to go digging around in the car. An arrest of the defendant for driving on a suspended operator's license would have removed him from the vehicle, put him in handcuffs, and we have no way of knowing whether he had a valid basis to search his car. We don't know whether it's partly legally, whether the guy could call a tow truck and done an inventory search. Basically, this really is Harris. As the Assistant Attorney General noted, he really can't sort this out. He doesn't like Harris. I don't blame him. It's one of those cases that decided that he
didn't. We follow you.
Thanks.
Time is up. We'll come down and greet counsel and...